welcome to Make Audio. I'm Philip Tyrone, associate editor of Make Magazine, and for the next 15 minutes or so, we're going to be talking about something you've probably seen a lot in the news lately. It's these disposable digital cameras, and now there's a disposable digital video camera. Our guest on the show is John Mousehammer, and he is one of the people who have really led the way to how to hack these, get the firmware off, get the photos off, get the videos off, and how to make a cable and do all these things that you're just reading about. He's actually the guy who's been doing a lot of this. So join us for the next 15 minutes or so, and if you're interested in these types of hacks and mods, don't forget to check the show notes. So here we go. All right, I'm here with John Mousehammer. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And, John, you have a fun hobby. You like to take disposable digital cameras and now disposable digital camcorders and reuse them, don't you?
Yeah. Actually, all sorts of stuff I like to take apart, disassemble.
Excellent. So tell me about the first one. I guess maybe it's not the first instance of notoriety, but it's the one that I kind of tuned into what you were working on. You took the disposable digital camera that they sell at Ritz called the Dakota, and it was a blue one, and I think you documented and had all the resources on how to take this disposable camera, which I think costs like $11 or something like that, and you'd return it to the store, and then you documented on how to get the photos off. Can you tell me a little bit about that project and what you did?
Yeah, someone had figured out that it had a standard USB interface and that it had to hook it up, and we were kind of stuck at that point where no one could get any data or talk to it. And so I got a copy of the firmware on my computer, and I found out it was an 8051 processor, which I'd worked on before. And I also realized that the operating system in it was pretty simple, so I just got a free disassembler and looked at the code and then just worked my way through it and tried to find what sections did what, and eventually I found the code that was locking the data. Mm-hmm. So once we found that, we could write the drivers for it and we got our pictures.
And so someone could take a $11 camera that they normally have to turn back into the company and basically have their own digital camera.
Yeah, and a lot of people use them for all sorts of neat things. There, a lot of them were in kind of dangerous situations where they put them up on kites. There was one where I went into a weather balloon and got some really beautiful pictures. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people gave them to their kids and had or classrooms and didn't care if the cameras got lost or dropped or broken or what.
So tell me about this process. When you said you got the firmware off, I mean, once you figured out that this could be plugged into a USB port, do these manufacturers have to have some standard things, and is that why anytime someone makes a camera that takes photos, there's a good chance that, you know, we might be able to figure out what's on it and how to get it off? How do you go about, you know, getting the firmware off, and what exactly do you do?
Let's see. Actually, getting the firmware off on these cameras has been fairly easy. It's all stored on a memory chip, and even though the memory chip isn't the kind of chip that you can plug into your regular old computer, there's readers that are fairly standardized that developers use, and that's what I use to go get this.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, but then the tough part is that the processors aren't documented, so I have to go and figure out how the software works to communicate with the hardware that makes the interface work, the USB interface work. Hmm. So a lot of guessing going on, but I can look for some things like strings or code that looks like it's switching on a command, or all sorts of just little tricks to figure out, and a lot of lucky guesses.
So it's a lot of trial and error and scientific experimentation, huh?
Yeah, I like to think of it as a crossword puzzle, because you go and you get one part of the code and you have a guess and you kind of put that in and then you see how that fits with the rest of the code. So it's kind of like the horizontal and vertical on a crossword puzzle. If it all fits together, then you know it's pretty good. But if it doesn't, then you got to keep looking.
And so the new one that we're all excited about, I remember I saw the press release, and I think I wrote a post on Make that said, future hacks, you know, coming soon. People are going to be hacking a disposable digital camcorder. So CVS, I don't have it out here on the West Coast, which is a bit of a bummer, but on the East Coast, the CVS stores are starting to carry, and a lot of them now have the Pure Digital camcorder version of this. And you just managed to get one, what, like a week ago?
Yeah, actually just a couple of days ago. I live in the West Coast, I'm sorry, I live in the Rocky Mountains, and we don't have any CBS stores there, so a friend of mine sent me one out, and I sucked the ROM out and just started the analysis.
So this is the third. This one's a little bit more expensive. It's $30, and the way it works is once people take the home videos, they bring them to CVS, and you get a DVD back with, like, Windows media files, I think. I think that's the way they do it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And tell me about your process. So how did you get the – is there a USB port on this? I think I read that you wired something, or did you take the chip out? How did you get the firmware off to start poking around with this one?
There is a USB port, but I haven't used it yet. Other people have tried that approach, but there's a big 128 megabyte memory chip in there, and I took that off, and I used the same memory reader that I built for the PB2, which, even though I built it, it's just a standard reader, and sucked all the data off, and it was in a bunch of different volumes. There's just standard DOS partitions like you'd find on any old memory card. And I started looking at them, and I found my original videos that I took.
Huh. And what format were they in?
They were AVIs.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not a codec expert, but it said DivX on it. And I don't know if that's the real DivX or if it's an MPEG-4 or what. But it's when I plugged it into my Mac, it just played the videos. So.
Gotcha. What if folks are interested, and I'm going to put all this in the show notes, where can they get the chip reader that you built or some of the parts? Is there anything specific, or do you have links to that on your site as well?
I have the source code that I used, but it's a homemade one, and so I don't have the schematics, but it's not that complicated either.
Okay.
And I think I built it for maybe about $100.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad. A lot cheaper than a commercial one.
Gotcha. And so, as far as what's going on, I've seen the Camera Hack forums and the Linux Hack forums. I think you've got the farthest so far. You've managed to get the chip out and the data off. Do you think the guys that are going down the USB path to get the data off are going to be successful, or do they have a really tough road ahead for writing drivers and things?
Actually, it's attacking the problem from both ends. So you can look at it from the USB stuff, and like on the PB2, people started reading some data. Well, actually, they looked at the drivers for other cameras, which gave me a hint as to where to look in the firmware for what would look like the appropriate driver on the other end. And then I found the locking mechanism. And so it's just kind of attacking the problem at both ends.
So now that I'm sorry.
All right, you pretty much need both, and because just the USB side won't get you there because it's essentially guessing.
Mm-hmm. So now that you've you're getting really close with the Pure Digital one, the camcorder. What do you think about all this?
Actually, I'm not really close at all. There's still a lot to go. I mean. We know that the files are encrypted, but to get to the USB, that's going to take disassembling all the software, which is a big, big challenge.
So right now, the only way is to get the chip off and using your method right now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not practical for most people.
Yeah. So now that you've gone through, a couple of variants of the disposable digital cameras, what do you think? Do you think that companies will ever try to stop people from figuring this out? So far, the only thing that I've seen is they just try to make it more complicated, which I kind of like.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of a challenge. They increased their between the first and the second cameras, they made it a little more secure. The first one had an algorithm in it, which I could disassemble and completely recreate, and the new one didn't have any algorithm at all. It just had some stored data. So we can access the earlier cameras, but since we don't know the stored data in there and we can't get to it easily, we can't figure out what code it takes to unlock. So they're raising the bar slightly, but still there's nothing like hardware encryption or even software encryption that would use a public key or something like that that would make it a lot more difficult to recover the files.
Do you think they're going to do that eventually?
Probably, yeah. But I think one thing that's limiting it is that for these cameras, they have to use commodity hardware. They can't really design their own chips. And, well, I guess they could, but they haven't. And
yeah. Makes it more expensive.
So, yeah. So we get just basic standard file formats that have been created by whoever made the commodity hardware.
Uh-huh. And so what's next? I mean, do you think we're going to see just better and better versions of cameras, you know, a few years from now, you know, 5-megapixel disposable digital cameras? Do you think we're going to see, is that the trajectory? Is that where you think it's going to go?
I don't know. I don't know if they're going to go with higher quality or if they're going to go with lower cost. It seems hard to make it lower cost because it's at a pretty reasonable price point. But I guess what they've done is add more features. They went from the plain digital camera without an LCD display, and then they added the display, and then now they've gone to full video. So, yeah, that's probably the trajectory is just more features.
And so if someone's interested in using these disposable digital cameras for, you know, the projects that you mentioned, you obviously have that all on your website, and then the video camera version, how many months, weeks, days do you think we're from just being able to buy the camera, going to a how-to somewhere on the web, and just being able to make a cable and plugging it in? Do you think that's going to happen this summer?
Maybe 6 months. I'm not sure. The PV2 took about four to five months, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll see. The firmware is getting more and more complicated. This is the first one that has a full blown operating system in it.
Yeah. So why do you think people are so interested in doing this?
I don't know. For me, it's fun, but I like to get the maximum value out of stuff I buy, so that's another aspect to it.
Uh-huh. And so, you know, I guess you bought the other one, the first version, the digital camera version. Do you still use it?
Not really. I just show it off. the PV2, I've sent a couple, modded a couple, and sent them to friends.
Oh, great.
But yeah, I'm a kind of a advanced amateur photographer, so I use my SLR for that.
Gotcha. All right, well, John, well, thank you so much. Hopefully in the next few months, as you continue hacking away, we can talk you into maybe doing an article for Make, and maybe that chip reader could get out there and get in the hands of some of the readers out there that that want to read chips.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll keep you up to date.
All right. Well, hey, thanks so much, man.
Okay. Thanks. Great talking to you.
For more information about Make Magazine, the show notes to this show, and to subscribe to Make Magazine to support these podcasts, please visit makezine.com.